So we can go back to the beginning of the canto and we'll look in more detail. Murakan, you would read?
The first and childhood of the flame, a manner of the cycles of desire, around the lighter she must not add to touch, hastening towards a far off unknown goal, earth follow the endless journey of the sun, a mind but half awake in the swing of the wild, on the bosom of inconscience, dream of life, and bore this finite world of thought and deed, across the immobile trance of the infinite.
Thank you. These two sentences are about the earth, but it's a view of the earth that's a bit unusual. Sri Aurobindo describes our earth as a maenad. The maenads, some people who have some classical education will remember, that the maenads are the female worshippers of the Greek god Dionysus, the god of wine. He's like Soma, he brings the divine intoxication. And the female worshippers of Dionysus used to dance in circles around his image as it was carried in a procession. In a state of ecstatic trance, they would circle round and round the image of their god. So he describes the earth as a maenad who is circling around in the cycles of desire, he says, around a light she must not dare to touch. Earth circles around the sun. She's always circling around the sun. So that light is her focus, her deity, but she can't touch it. She must not dare to touch it. And she's, of course, the sun also is moving. So as the sun moves, the earth follows the endless journey of the sun. And she moves quite fast. She's hastening. And she doesn't know what is the goal. Where are they traveling to? So that's a beautiful image of our earth, worshipping the sun, following him, focused entirely on the sun as it goes on its unknown journey, its journey towards the unknown goal. This earth has a consciousness, a mind that's only half awake. It's in the state that the earth consciousness has reached now in the process of evolution. It's just half awake on this this little globe that is swinging through the void, the emptiness of space. And the earth is made, our physical earth is made of matter. And that earth principle is the symbol of matter. Matter which is the expression of the inconscience, no? The opposite of consciousness. But on the bosom of the inconscience of matter, the earth is dreaming out life. Life has emerged in her dream, and she's carrying this finite world that we know, this finite world of thought and action. She's carrying this through this vastness of space, which he says is the immobile trance of the infinite. We think of space as just empty or with only very scattered particles of matter here and there in it. We don't realize that it's a vast, infinite consciousness in a state of trance, state of ecstasy, the unmoving trance of the infinite and eternal. It's So she's moving through that, what seems to be an emptiness, but is really the immobile trance of the infinite. Margaret, you would read?
A vast, mutable silence is her end. Prisoner of speed upon a jeweled wheel, she communed his mystic heart in space. Amid the ambiguous stillness of the stars, she moved towards some undisclosed event, and her rhythm measured the long wheel of time. In ceaseless motion, round the purple rim, day after day sped by like colored spokes, and through a glamour of shifting hues of air, the seasons drew in linked significant dance, the symbol pageant of the changing year.
Thank you. Anything to ask?
Prisoner of speed upon a jeweled wheel.
So the earth is kept in position by her speed, the speed at which she travels, mm-hmm. and she has to stick to this same orbit. It's that's her jeweled wheel, he says. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And later he develops this idea that this orbit of the earth is jeweled with color and movement further on. But she's communing all the time with this circular movement of hers. She's in communication with the mystic heart in space.
Where is the stillness of the stars amongst us?
We don't really understand what it means. The stars are silent, and it's not clear what they signify.
But ambiguous means it has two meanings.
At least two or more.
Okay.
So you can't be sure what it means, because it could mean this, or it could mean that, or it could mean something else. Something that's ambiguous, the meaning is unclear. Yes, I think so. Yeah. Of which the sun is the symbol for us, in our solar system.
With a purple rim.
Yeah, we have to visualize it, no? He wants us to visualize it. This is one place where, it would be so nice to have a film made by a great artist who could show us this, the way that the earth, she's moving on her own axis also, as she moves around the sun. And there's this alternation of day and night. And here on earth, we have this changing color of the sky with the day and the night. So all that has something to do with this purple color that can be seen, perhaps with the inner eye.
On this presentation from this Kohana family from Japan, was very much presenting this, that, how you say, the earth is whirling, the sun is whirling itself, and all in the
the galaxy.
And then in galaxies, and so that always is moving, goes from all sides. It is always so. This, our consciousness, it's not linear anymore. Everything is, and even a small movement from ourselves, the person has an influence on all these movements altogether. So
that's why the Sanskrit, or one of the Sanskrit words for the universe, is jagat. It means that which is moving. And the first line of the Isha Upanishad says, everything that's moving in this moving universe, all this is a clothing or a dwelling place for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And we think beyond the universe, beyond the manifestation, it's not moving anymore. There it's immutable and unchanging, time, beyond space. But everything within the manifestation is moving. Yes. And this movement of the earth is what he's emphasizing here, and the way that the movement of the earth around the sun means for us earth beings, it measures time. This is how we measure time, days and months and years. And that's what... And these are the jewels, yes. Yeah. And finally, the seasons, yes. The seasons, through this glamour, this magic of changing colors of air, the seasons. And then we can think of this other image in classical art, in Western classical art, the way that the seasons are often depicted as beings, as goddesses. They're painted and they have perhaps their hands linked. They're joining in a dance. It's a significant dance. And this is a symbol pageant. The idea of a pageant is a moving drama that tells a story. It's moving from place to place in the town. So the seasons are moving and they are telling their story. Each of them has a significance. And in the next pages, Shobindo is going to bring out something of the significance of each of the seasons.
What perfect use of this perfect word.
Yes, I mean, when we look into detail, we see how every single word is contributing something to the picture.
Any idea of the spokes? Is it the spokes as
a wheel? Wheels have spokes, so if and each spoke is connected to the center, in this case the sun, and to the rim. So, and each day is like a spoke. And they're moving quite fast. The wheel is circling quite fast.
Three.
Yeah, 365 days in 1 year.
Also, could it be connected to that Vedic image that life is mounted on the spokes?
Yeah, we can think of this too. Yeah, this is a wheel, no?
I feel also now in this last years, the months are running. Yeah, so many.
This is what happens to us as we grow older. The time seems to pass faster, and we have more and more things to do. Yeah. It's not like that for animals, nor for children. The time lasts forever, or it stretches out a very long time. You have to wait a week for your birthday. It seems like eternity. So the one who's leading this pageant, as Sri Aurobindo presents it, is the summer. Maggie, you'll read about the summer.
Across the burning languor of the soil, faced summer with his pomp of violent moons, and stamped his tyranny on torrid light, and the blue seal of a great burnished sky.
It's only one sentence, but let's pause there and look at this picture of the summer. Sunil has made absolutely extraordinary music for this passage. We should listen to it one more time. So summer is masculine, and he's like a king, moving majestically across the burning languor of the soil. It's the time when the sun is at its hottest, and there's a kind of lazy feeling because of that heat, and the heat that's coming up from the soil as well as radiating down from the sky. He also has a retinue. It says his pomp of violent noons. He's also as if he's part of a procession, a pageant, and around him are these noons, the day when the time when the summer is at its most intense, in the middle of the day when the sun is directly overhead. Sometimes I feel it's like a great lion in the sky there roaring at us. You know, there's something violent and magnificent about it. And he stamped his tyranny. He's a tyrannical ruler. He imposes on everything this torrid light, this powerful, hot light. And he has his seal, this blue seal of a great burnished sky. Something that's burnished is polished, highly polished. So then, Alice, there's the rain tide. You would read next, yeah?
Which line?
Next, through it, line 24, next through its fiery swoon. Yeah?
Next through its fiery swoon, or clotted knot, rain tide burst in upon torn wings of heat, startled with lightnings, airs, droughts, lashed with life-giving streams, a torpid soil, overcast with flare, sound, and storm-wind dark, the star-defended doors of heaven's dim sleep, or from the gold eye of her paramour, covered with packed cloud veils of earth's brown face.
Thank you. The seasons that are described here are not exactly the seasons that we experience here in South India. These are the North Indian seasons. These are the seasons of that area where Savitri is born, is going to be born. So there we get the great intensity of the heat of May, you know, and then when it gets hot enough, the monsoon arrives. So the rain tide bursts in through that clotted knot of heat, or that fiery swoon. It's so hot, the languor, the sleepiness.
What is the meaning of swoon?
Swoon is when you lose consciousness, you faint. Torpid, it's also kind of when you can't move for some reason or other. It has to do with a torpor, when you're in a state as if you've been drugged or you're ill, you're in a kind of...
Torrid,
yeah, that's this hot light.
It's only used for light.
I think so, torrid. Well, I mean, we can use it in a metaphorical sense of something that heats you up. So the rain comes and it's quite violent, but what it's doing is it's giving life. Well, it's a time which is very, very necessary to generate new life after all that heat and burning time of the summer. And he gives this long description, which Jocelyn read, of the rain tide. We don't see the stars anymore. Yeah? The clouds are there. Yeah, the rain. Yeah. There's this idea of the stars being warriors. They have their spears of light, and they are protecting heaven. So, and the rain tide, heaven is sleeping, there's not much light, and the storms come, the flare and the sound and the strong winds, storm-winged dark. Or sometimes there are just clouds, a dense covering of clouds covering the earth's brown face, so that her paramour, her lover, the sun, can't see her anymore. Can't. Oh, my turn. Armies of revolution crossed the time field. The clouds' unending march besieged the world. Tempests' pronunciamentos claimed the sky, and thunder drums announced the embattled god. A traveler from unquiet neighboring seas, the dense-maned monsoon rode neighing through Earth's hours. Thick now the emissary javelins. Enormous lightning split the horizon's rim and hurled from the quarters as from contending camps, married heaven's edges, steep and bare and blind. A surge and hiss and onset of huge rain, the long straight sleet drift, clamors of winged storm charge, throngs of wind faces, rushing of wind feet, hurrying swept through the prone, afflicted plains. Heaven's waters trailed and dribbled through the drowned land. So, of course, the rain time is a time of change, violent change. Armies of revolution across the time field. It's not a time actually when human armies will be on the march. They will wait until the rain tide is over. But this is bringing change in time. There's storms that pass are like armies. Mila, you can tell us something about this word pronunciamentos. But it's in my mind it's associated with politics, with Franco and Mussolini, and they made these proclamations that
maybe that concept, but also pronunciar is when you state something.
It's just a statement. Yes. Okay. So these are the statements of tempests, the storms. No, they are very loud, claiming the sky, the whole sky. And the sound of the thunder. These are the drums of the gods going into battle. And the monsoon itself he describes as a horse, no? With a thick mane of clouds, and he makes the sound that he makes. He's neighing. He's come from the seas, whether from the Arabian Sea in the summer, or for us now it's coming from the other side. Embattled, it almost sounds as if they're under attack, but he doesn't say what they're under attack. So it's as if there are armies representing cosmic forces and powers which are fighting together, bringing about revolution. And they are throwing javelins at each other, spears. It's one of the javelin throwing, it's one of the disciplines in Olympic games. But this is an image for the lightning, I think. The lightning, he says it gets sent. They're emissary javelins. They're sent with a message. And he pictures it very vividly, the way that those javelins of light come and light up all the darkness, split the rim of the horizon. And it's as if they are being hurled from all the four directions. The quarters are the quarters of the compass, north, south, east, and west. So the lightnings are coming from all sides, as if at each side, at each quarter, there's a camp of embattled gods. You know, they are fighting against each other and contending, competing. Yeah. Mm. And then there's this line, it's the lightnings, the javelins, married heaven's edges, steep and bare and blind. As if when the lightning comes, we can see these high piled dark clouds. And it's as if they are joined by these flashes of lightning. And then we know that sound, you know, of the rain approaching. You can hear it coming nearer and nearer and nearer. The surge and hiss and onset of huge rains. You hear it coming and then it's there. And not here, but up in the north, you get the sleet, you know, the mixture of snow and rain, icy rain, horrible, long, straight, sweet drip. And the clamor, the noise of the wind coming, the storm coming. It's particularly vivid, his description of the wind, no? And it's as if he makes us see that these winds are beings. They have faces, we can hear their feet, and they are rushing through the prone, afflicted plains, those vast plains of the Ganges. No, it's a very, very vast area, all swept by these storm armies. So all the waters of heaven have poured down, and they're trailing and dribbling through this drowned land, flooded land. Kayananda, would you like to read? No. You wanted to ask something?
One thing that now, listening to all Kiyojoshi's talks, that in the Veda is very clearly that life is a battle, so that is exactly what is here described. That's all the forces and beings, divine beings, who are carrying the special parts.
Yes. And also in the Vedas, of course, this pouring down of rain, it's a very, very auspicious thing. That when there's the inner realization, when they find the herds of the sun in the cave and they release them, then the next thing that happens is that all the divine energies pour down in the form of rain and rivers. So it's life-giving, but it's quite intense when it's happening. So at the same time, he's evoking the symbolic significance of the rain time, but he's also giving us a wonderful evocative picture of what it's actually like.
The word sibilant is what?
Sibilant, it's the sounding. Sibilants are the sounds that we make with between our teeth. You know? So a hiss is a sibilant sound. Yeah, we didn't read that yet. You want to read again, Antim? Let's try to go to the bottom of the page.
Then all was a swift strike, a sibilant race. Or all was tempest's shout and waters fall. A dimness sagged on the gray floor of day. Its dingy sprawling length joined more to ease. Whirling sludge and shower, it reached black dark. Day, a half darkness wore at its dull breath.
Go a bit further.
Light looked into dawn's tarnished glass and met its own face there, twin to a half lit night. Downpour and drip and seeping mist swayed all, and turned dry soil to bog and reeking mud. Earth was a quagmire, heaven a dismal block. None saw through dime-drenched weeks the dungeon's sun.
Thank you. So again, I have to say it's not quite like that here, even during the monsoon time, no? But if you live in Calcutta, then you experience this sometimes, that it rains non-stop for 2 months. No? But in the last couple of days, we experienced this, didn't we? Yesterday I was quoting this line about day, a half darkness wore as its dull dress. We had to have the lights on in the house all day. The dawn comes, light looks into dawn's tarnished glass, a mirror that is spoiled with spotted and streaked. You can't see yourself clearly through it, no? It sees its own face there, twin to a half-lit night's twilight state, and everything is damp, downpour and drip and mist creeping everywhere. And the dry soil, the soil that has been so dry during the summer, gets turned to bog, mud. You sink into it. And it even smells bad, reeking mud smells bad. Earth was a quagmire. A quagmire is mud that sucks you in. It's not only that you sink into it, it gets hold of you and pulls you in. And heaven was just this dismal gray block through dank, moist, wet, drenched weeks. Nobody saw the sun. It's as if the sun is imprisoned. The dungeon sun has been put in prison. Arti, you like to read the last bit? Line 59, even when? So even when there's no storm, when there's no turmoil, or even a faint ray of brighter light glimmers through those weeping clouds. Like in the way that on a person's face, perhaps a sad smile may gleam through returning tears. Again, the tears come. All promised brightness failed at once, denied. This reminds me of the place where I grew up. These last days have been reminding me of all the reasons why I left England as soon as I possibly could. So this is one of the characteristics, that all promised brightness failed at once, denied. It looks like the sun's going to come out, but it doesn't. So, but there's been all this tremendous noise of the storm. But at last, a last massive deluge, there's one huge downpour, which it thrashes, it beats that mud that's already dead, you know, but it's as if it wants to beat it to death. And then a subsiding mutter, it gets quieter, quieter. And all suddenly it's very quiet, and you can hear the sound of the trickling water, the muddy creep of sinking floods, or the sound of the trees, something moving, a whisper and green toss of trees. And then the rain tide is over, and the next season comes. So Sri Aurobindo writes all different kinds of wonderful poetry, but this is his nature poetry. Very enjoyable. So shall we hear Mother reading the seasons? Yeah. Mother recorded these words, very often the recording conditions were very far from ideal. She was just up in her room, and whatever noises came up from the street there, it sounds as if there was some kind of big carpentry work going on nearby. But somebody is now cleaning up all these tapes, and then we'd have to see whether they can be remixed with the music.
You have the music separately?
I would.
So someone has.
Yeah.
I think it's rather nice to hear.
Well, the children playing and so on.
Yeah.
Some things are better than others.
Yeah.
But I know at the beginning of the About Savitri recordings, just the first passage, which she made much later when it was much more difficult for her to articulate. Somebody's banging away. It's really painful to listen to. So I'm happy that that work is getting done now. But yes,
so
we're very lucky to have them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Sometimes it's also nice when her clock is.
Yes. Her clocks often. More than one. I know there's one photograph I have somewhere in my collection. Mother sitting all alone in her room. When it was first made, there's a lot of the furniture that's there now was not there. She's sitting under a lamp, and you can see 8 clocks in this picture. So. Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.